Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Okay, we're back, and I promised you that as soon as I posted this article, and to me, this article should give you an epiphany, and you should be able to share this article to ad nauseum to those who are serious about getting the government in check, who are sick of all of the unconstitutional government that is running us into the ground, is spending us into oblivion, okay? So, what I would ask is that you go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and look for our new page. It is called Constitutional Perspective. The link to that is on the right side all the way down. Oh, by the way, I believe we've also added this to the Constitutional Articles page as well. But if you want to be able to just put that into a Facebook link so somebody can just go straight to the article without having to go to a PDF and downloading. And we put the PDF out there so that you can download it on your device, handheld or what have you, and read it autonomously. You can send it to anybody you want to send it to. So we believe that making PDFs of these documents is critical. Now, keep in mind that this is still going through an editing process, but editing isn't necessarily my priority. Remember, old Ed Tosh used to always say that better is the enemy of good enough. And when I hear something that rings and resonates, I take that and I run with it. I embrace that concept that better is the enemy of good enough. Because if things had to be perfect, if things had to be better, then it would take too long. And in the intelligence world, time is the essence of intelligence. If you do not have the information in time, it is of no value. So, what we're going to be talking about today and over the next few shows, by the way, these are must-hear shows. You're going to want to, if there's a point in time where you go, I really want to have some meaty shows to get somebody really to tune in. Today and probably tomorrow, as we go through what we're going to set up this argument with the 14th Amendment and with what the heck is going on. And if you look at, I hate to say this, but you know, what's going on in the impeachment process is the fireworks are for a very specific purpose. And it doesn't make any sense to me. I've already said that I believe that the Democratic Party is doing everything they can to help reelect Trump by acting the way they're acting. Everybody agrees this will hurt them. So why are they doing this? I don't know. But anyway, what we're going to do is we're going to dig into the Constitution, the very specific articles and sections, and we're going to get into the 14th Amendment, like I promised you, and how the 14th Amendment, along with Section 3, should be the weapon of choice. And I want everybody to go out and to their constitutional weapon store and make sure you get plenty of Section 3 bats so that you can start swinging at your legislators, at your county commissioners, at everybody, because Section 3 applies to every public servant. That's why this is so critical. They put teeth in the Constitution that everybody's ignoring. And oh, by the way, I constantly hear organizations, and not to pick on the John Birch Society, but you know, they're a constant feeder of we got to react. Aren't you tired of reacting? And honestly, I believe that is why the silent majority is becoming dumb. And when I mean dumb, I mean it's like you can't even speak anymore. The silent majority has lost it, but I think the fact of the matter is the silent majority has failed to, they've reached such a level of apathy that they have failed to recognize that there's still an opportunity. And so going into this, I want to prove to you that by using Republic Review, we can stop reacting. As a matter of fact, I got a group text. A lot of people were saying, get me out of this thing, and using expletives and so forth, regarding a call to help a family that's suffering in Idaho. And Ammon Bundy was, basically it's a call to action from Ammon Bundy. And I'm going, well, why doesn't Ammon Bundy start leading the charge for Republic Review? Why does he not want to fix the problem? Because Republic Review would clearly fix this problem where this, you know, this family is being, you know, affected up in, I believe it's up in Idaho. But anyway, these are distractions. Let's focus on getting the states to take a stand for their constitution and get the federal government into compliance. There's no way this can go sideways. There's no way this can turn sour. Getting compliance to the Constitution will only pay us in huge dividends. And I'm talking about positive dividends, not negative dividends. Anyway, so we're going to get into the 14th Amendment. We're going to get into Section 3. And we're also going to get into the oath and the oath of citizens. We're actually going to read these things, because I think it's critical that you understand precisely what these teeth are. And I don't know if you can hear the heavy panting, but I told you my bully's not feeling well. But if she's, you know, coming in here, that means she kind of wants some attention. But nevertheless, if she starts barking, I'll have to do something about that. But nevertheless, I'm going to get into that. But coming up, after we're done with this, we're going to turn right back around and dig into the Constitution and show you how much the framers have gone out of their way to protect us. Oh, by the way, the other thing that I want to understand is, because this whole thing with Ammon Bundy and actually, you know, these calls to action to try to save people that are being oppressed, just like the Bundys themselves, just like the Hammonds, and just like all these other people, how they're being affected by the BLM and these enforcement agencies, this article regarding what is the real problem actually hits the nail on the head. And we're going to get into that, but you're going to want to read this article, because I'm not going to give you the full citations and everything else that is in the article, but we're going to go through this and I'm going to prove to you that we're living under federal tyranny, and it's far worse than you can even imagine. And even though everybody's smiling and everybody's happy, that we're this close to being able to be put under siege by a federal tyrant or despot, whoever that might be. It might be, who knows? It could be Trump. I doubt it. He does, but then again, you never know. Is he not doing good things? Yes. Is he not doing bad things? Yes. So you never know. You never know who he's truly supporting. There's a lot of people that truly believe he's supporting the American people and make America first and so forth. But you know what? I have sent messages and nobody has called me. It is like the voice from the wilderness, right? I'm just some voice from the wilderness where, you know, I'm spouting out the actual facts and laying out the academic evidence for this solution. And it seems like the people that are in power want to turn their back on it. And I actually will get into this, because I have addressed some state legislators who, you know, they claim to puff their chest up and I'm a constitutional supporter. And then I say, well, would you sign a pledge that would hold you accountable to your oath? In other words, if you violate your oath of office, would you resign? And they go, well, I don't sign pledges like that. That's ludicrous. I mean, and it's arbitrary, isn't it? Whether something's constitutional or not, that's for the court to decide. No, it's not. Is it in the Constitution? Are you doing something, taking money that is in the Constitution? Anybody can recognize that. And the framers wrote us a contract that was very clear. It's the same thing as a power of attorney. You only have these powers. Any other powers that are being exercised, you do not have the power to exercise. The only way you can exercise these powers is through a constitutional amendment. That's how it is. And they've been making it up as they go along for quite a while. And that's why we actually have to stand up. So we're going to get into ex post facto laws and bills of attainder after we do all of this. And that will probably set us up for a perfect timing to give it about a week or so for our first Thanksgiving proclamation, why this is important. And then the following week, I'm just going to, you know, ping you every day. Hey, make sure you read this for your family on Thanksgiving Day. I'd like to see a start putting perspective, a constitutional perspective, to these supposedly federal holidays that we're supporting because we're being forced. If you're an employer, you're being forced to support this because you're being forced to give people time off. I've said this so many times. I'm not a fan of government compulsion of paying somebody for not being productive. You got to give somebody some time off. Now, and there's people that talk, I'll take a quick second. I know this is flu season and cold season, and so I really have a hard time with anybody that's sick that goes to work or gets out in public. There ought to be a law that actually forces, you know, you to stay home. And if you go out and you get somebody sick, that person could sue you for lost wages and the economic impact of you getting them sick. I think when I'm sick, I stay home. I do not take the chance, regardless of what I have to do. And anybody that knows me knows that this is kind of founded maybe on some germaphobe stuff, but it really isn't. This is only, I'm out of time, so we'll bring it up when we come back.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
I'm a huge advocate for getting people to pay for what they do that costs economic impact. So like taggers, instead of citing them and throwing them in jail, they need to actually pay for whatever it took for labor and the paint and everything else. And even if these folks don't have the time,
or they don't have, I should say, they don't have the money, a part of their punishment should be that they do all of the work in cleaning up the mess that they made. And they should have to pay for that. And if they don't have the ability to pay for that, that somehow they need to pay the community back in, you know, one way or another, whether that be picking up trash or what have you. But, you know, it's like it's a revolving door that we don't hold people accountable. And illness is the same thing. Now, here's the problem I have. They force you to get a flu shot. But if you come down with the flu, they're not forcing you. In other words, they're okay with you becoming the catalyst of an epidemic. Yeah, go ahead, go out and get everybody sick. Then we can force everybody to get inoculated. Are you kidding? Why is it that we're even allowing people to get out into the public? You should be either hospitalized or you stay in bed. You stay at home and in bed. And then when it is confirmed whatever you have that is, you know, whether it's a cold or what have you, because it should be public knowledge as to when you are contagious so that you know that you cannot work. Now, I do have a problem with employers firing somebody because they're legitimately sick, and I believe that you need to prove that you're legitimately sick, but if they fire you, then there should be some level of protection. Because it's not your fault that you did get sick because I don't see anybody. I've never been in the store where people are licking the counters or licking the, you know, the little windows over the freezer where people sneeze and so forth, the sneeze guards. I don't see people doing that. So obviously you have been affected and infected by somebody who violated the civil code of not causing harm to somebody. You do realize that people still die of the flu today. And if we're really trying to solve the problem, forcing people into convalescing and into, you know, being self-contained in their home or in a hospital so that nobody else can get sick, well, then there you go. Then we've eliminated the spreading. You know, and every summer, or not every summer, every winter, as a matter of fact, the beginning of fall and going into spring, sometimes even into summer, you will see, oh, the flu is, you know, at a high, it's, what do they call it, epidemic level in this state, and it's starting to grow in this state and trending in these states. Why? Why is it that we allow people to continue to go to work and infect people? This should stop. If we're a civil society and we realize that we're trying to keep people healthy, that means you got to keep the sick people, the contagious people away from the population or the public. It all starts with P. Anyway, so I'm ranting on this because I really hate getting sick. And anybody that knows me, I've become, let's say, I don't lose my logic and reason, but I get very passionate. If somebody is sick, get out of here, get home, stay your distance away from me. And I wish I could point to a law that says, hey, you know, you're in violation of the law and we can come after you if I get sick and I lose wages. Now, even if your employer has sick wages, or I should say sick time, that's, you know, that's nice. But what that does is it actually, it takes away your compensation, because bottom line, the money that the employer has to accommodate for sick time, that's all a part of your compensation package. Wouldn't you rather have that money? Wouldn't you rather be able to just stay home? And if you are not stay home, but to go to work and stay healthy. But if you do get sick, whoever got you sick, you can, you know, go after lost wages after that person. And that person is going to be liable for going into public and getting you sick. Why isn't there more laws like this? Why isn't there even one law like this? Because everybody knows that that's what happens when people send their kids to school sick. Well, if your kid gets sick and you have to stay home from work, you should be going after the parents that had sent their kids to school sick and have them pay. Well, we don't have the money. Oh, well, you know what? I've got work. I needed to get some ditches dug. You can come over and do work then. And that's where we need to go. We need to hold people accountable to the economic impacts that they are placing upon us and society. So let me dive into what we wanted to talk about, or the things that I think are important. So one of the things that I need to really point out is this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. You also know that this show is the only show that provides you with academic evidence and solutions as to the intent, exactly what the framers gave us, and how what we are doing now is so far out of the design and intent of the framework of the Constitution. If we do not demand, if you do not start shifting the paradigm and saying we demand compliance, you don't have to use the words of Republic Review. That may be kind of hard for somebody to remember. Compliance, maybe that's a tough word too, but it's an important word. They have to comply to the Constitution. Do you care if your employer complies to the contract that he's supposed to pay you? Do you care if your laborers are in compliance to the contract? Or if, I'm here, I've been here all day, and you can't fire me, you got to just pay me. Nobody wants to be held hostage to that type of hostility and that type of flagrant violation of a contract. It's illegal. So what are we going to do? We have to hold them accountable. So as we go through some of these issues that we talk about, and as I disclose all of these things to you, because if you start putting them in perspective, if you start stacking up every single thing that is impacting you or things that are out there that can impact you, then I think it will make sense when we actually show and prove to you that compliance would solve all of our problems. Now, you can support us, by the way, with our Red State Coffee. Just go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, and that's where you can get find the link that'll take you to eBay to where you can buy the coffee. This is top-notch coffee. Please give it a try and give us a call, 425-270-5416, and let us know what you think. Now, let me just dive into the enumerated powers. Article 1 of the Constitution, Section 8, Subsection 15. Now, this is really important. I want you to, nowhere in here does it say that the federal government has the ability to create a bureaucracy of enforcement. In other words, we're going to create a law regarding the IRS. We have this ability because even I, as I started, kind of getting involved in the Constitution and looking at the IRS, well, technically, the federal government does have the ability to tax people. Okay, they have the ability to tax people, but they don't have the ability to enforce those taxes. And that's why we're going to read subsection 15 of section 8 in article 1. To provide for, so Congress shall have the power to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the union. The laws of the union being taxes. If there's an income tax, if there's any type of taxes, the only entity that has the constitutional authority, IRS does not have that authority. That authority was delegated to the militia. There's no amendment that says that the IRS or any other agency has the ability to execute. There has never been an amendment to remove subsection 15 from Article 8. There's never been anything other than the militia is the enforcement agency. But they've been ignoring that for well over 1.5 centuries, almost 2 centuries. That's why the militia was inept by the time the Civil War began. They deliberately let the militia become a tag-tattered organization because they wanted to have a military state instead of a public self-government state. As the somebody would say, as the Federalist found their way into the Democratic Party, the big government party, the statist party, so that the state could actually do more and more. But either way, they are violating the Constitution. If you understand, again, that they're to call forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, the militia is also supposed to suppress insurrections and, hear this, repel invasions. Now, we're going to get into Article 4 as well, but we're out of time. So as soon as we come back, I'm going to tie this last clause, this last responsibility in subsection 15, repel invasions, in Article 4. And I'm going to show you how this whole immigration problem has been blown way out of proportion and how the Constitution is designed in dealing with this. So with that, we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Folks, if you're tired of this onslaught invasion, Republic Review would fix this. Republic Review would fix almost every problem regarding the federal government and how they're either not doing what they're supposed to do, or they're not doing the things that, you know, they aren't supposed to do. Or I should say, they're doing things that they have no business doing or meddling with. So, going into Article 4 of the Constitution, there's this little thing in Section 4. It's called the Guarantee Clause, right? And it says that the United States shall guarantee to every state in the Union a republican form of government, and shall protect them against invasion. So how are they supposed to do that? Well, according to Article 1, Subsection 15 in Section 8, it's pretty clear. They're supposed to call the militia to suppress the invasion. If the civil authorities, the sheriffs, cannot, you know, put down the insurrections and or the invasion, then the militia is supposed to do it. The militia is the army of choice. A standing army is designed to actually go protect us like abroad, as Jefferson sent the Marines into Tripoli against the Barbary pirates. So I want to be clear here. If you understand just the immigration issue alone, putting it into context, the militia is supposed to be the go-to guys. It's not supposed to be the Border Patrol. It's not supposed to be, I mean, the Border Patrol is outside. Now, so we do have a responsibility to running the immigration and the border, but the enforcement of finding people like ICE and all of that, I'm sorry, these guys should actually be in the militia. Now, here's the problem. I understand that from the very beginning, the concept of the militia was to be a voluntary service. I believe that enforcing as many of the constitutional laws with all the threats that we have today, I believe it should be a paid, a compensated service. And that when the federal government calls them into service, they are compensated in addition to what the state compensation should be, because I truly believe that, well, so many of the things that the federal government would be having the militia do would actually go away, because Bureau of Land Management's an unconstitutional power. They don't have the authority to even enforce that. So their ownership of state lands would completely go away, because they really don't own it. That's state land, if you understand what I'm saying. Same thing with the Energy Department. Same thing with the EPA. All of these things would really go away. And so the militia's focus would probably be really more on immigration and dealing with and finding people that are violating or here. And so who's better to do this? People that are living in the states and living in the communities than, you know, hiring a mercenary from, you know, one state that doesn't even know, or, you know, they're operating in a completely different state from where they actually grew up. So if you start understanding the wisdom, I mean, it just, it's like, wow, how brilliant and how genius were the framers, or how divine was the divine hand of providence in inspiring them. Now, getting into, and I've said this before, but since it's right here in front of me, I'm gonna read it to you again, because we talked about this on Constitution Day. But I've been saying, if Trump really wants to put the earth on its ear, he could actually go to Article 4, Section 3, the admission of new states. New states may be admitted by Congress into this union. Now, it doesn't say anywhere where those states have to be. It doesn't say anywhere that these can't be states in Europe, states in Asia, states in South America, Central America, Africa, or anywhere. There is no reason why we can't start setting standards and allowing other states to come into the United States, not as a third world nation. They would have to change their standards and everything else. And Estonia is not a third world nation. Chile is not really a third world nation. I mean, California is on a fast path of surpassing Chile in incivilities and all sorts of problems, right? I mean, California, with all of its people and all of its money and all the things it could be doing great, I mean, it's deliberately, you know, tying that rope around its neck and climbing up on the ladder and, you know, tightening that rope just in case they fall, they won't have to, you know, fall and hit the ground. In other words, they're hanging themselves. If you start looking at the, you know, the opportunities that we have here, this would kill new states coming into the Constitution, or I should say coming into the Constitutional Republic as stakeholders and members of this republic. That would completely change the makeup. It would one, make the United Nations completely irrelevant. Isn't that what we want? I mean, it's one thing to say we you know, get rid of them, but they're still going to exist because there's nothing that's competing with them. But America is the competition. The reason Wilson came up with the League of Nations was he understood that the United States could have become a truly competitive you know, broker of politics in the world, that the global world, people are going to come along and finally have this epiphany. But instead, they kept on driving in division and these concepts of not uniting on the Constitution, but these concepts of uniting on some globalist agenda. And how did we get bought into this? Because we've been indoctrinated over the past 150 years. So I'm here to tell you, if you understand how a lot of our problems with foreign trade and everything, I mean, once a state becomes a state, they can't be pitching or they can't be taken advantage of. So Hong Kong and Taiwan, those two states, we would actually have, you know, open and free trade with. They wouldn't be able to, you know, jack up taxes on any of the goods that we bring in. And the same thing with the stuff that we give them. There's huge advantages. Plus, it pokes China, the most evil bully in the history and the annals of the world. It pokes China in the eye. Why wouldn't Trump want to do this? Why wouldn't Trump want to understand the Constitution and say, you know what, we can do this, Congress. Why is it that you haven't been trying to do this? Oh, well, because as long as we keep everybody divided, then we can actually succeed in conquering them, right? United we stand, divided we fall. And as long as they keep the world divided, then they can get away with getting everybody to submit to the global agenda. We're all being divided in so many different ways. Even the Republican Party is being divided in so many ways, okay? So what we wanted to do and what I wanted to do was kind of put into context what we have here, that the enforcement is the militia. It is the most powerful constitutional enforcement agency. All other agencies that are federal are unconstitutional. There is nowhere in the Constitution where the federal government has the authority to enforce its own. It is given to, and Congress shall have the power to, call upon the militia to execute the laws of the Union. And that's pretty clear, folks. That is who is supposed to be enforcing it. So when they write these little clauses that Congress shall have the power to enforce this, it doesn't mean that Congress can create their own enforcement agency. If that's the case, then they would have to amend Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15, and they haven't done that. So that's why they don't think they have to do that. They think, oh, yeah, the militia, that's something completely different. No, it's not. When they first forced the tax on alcoholic beverages, the Whiskey Rebellion was a byproduct of that in Western Pennsylvania. This was in the early 1790s. So what did they do when they said, we're not going to pay these taxes? George Washington mustered up the militia, and he went up to Western Virginia and arrested 20 of these scoundrels, brought them back. Some got slaps on the hands. The other ones got a little time in shackles, and the rest of it was all done. The militia has the constitutional authority, and Washington abided by the Constitution and the framers. And for the most part, the federal government was non-intrusive at that point. Just because the federal government has decided to become intrusive and unconstitutional doesn't mean it's right. Doesn't mean it's constitutional. They have the power and authority to do that. So now we want to get into the 14th Amendment. And the 14th Amendment has five sections. A lot of people, and so why is the 14th Amendment and immigration a big deal? Because Section 1 is a huge, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, that tool that a carpenter or a contractor has, where on one end it's like a waffle weave type of hammerhead, and on the other end it's a little hatchet, and then it, you know, has like a crowbar capability with on, I think it's on the hatchet side, but I mean it's a pretty, you know, you look at that and you go, that's for building, that looks like a weapon of war. Anyway, Section 1 is a pretty universal weapon in so many different ways. And so I recognize the fact that we're going into a break right now. So when we come back, we're gonna dig into section one. And I know this is the last segment, so that's why I said the next few episodes is going to be very focused on the Constitution and how these things are weaved in and out. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
All right, so we're getting into Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. And this is all about citizenship, which, as far as I'm concerned, clarifies precisely who can be a citizen and who can't. Now, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. Okay, so that's the first clause. That's the citizenship clause. And to be very clear, I want to go back to Article 1, Section 8. And the Congress shall have the power to establish an uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States. So this is subsection 4 of Article 8, or Article 1, Section 8, okay? So it's Congress's responsibility. And oh, by the way, they have laws on the books. And the laws are very clear that you can only way you can come here to visit America is either with a visa so that we know you're coming in, or that you petition to say, I want to become a citizen. And there's a process for this, and it is a uniform rule. I have said this time and time again. We have two countries that border us. And each of those countries could actually take advantage. And that's why we have these laws to say, you can't just walk across our border and then try to become a citizen. You are in abject violation of our immigration laws. Well, why is it that Congress wants to call these people undocumented residents, undocumented citizens? Well, what they're doing is they're actually violating, and this goes into Section 3. So when we hit Section 3, you're going to hear GR just rant. about how these public servants who have raised their arm to the square are violating their oath and must be removed. So anyway, to be very clear, you just can't come here and then just have, like, the whole Dreamers Act is unconstitutional because it violates the established uniform rule of immigration. Now, they're trying, and where did the Dreamers Act come from? Oh, well, shoot, that was an executive order. Congress didn't do it because Congress couldn't have done it because Congress was too split on the topic to actually allow it to become law. And so I'm here to tell you that this whole Dreamers Act, even though these dreamers feel like they're entitled, they're still in abject violation because they have never changed the laws to say, well, if you happen to come here because your folks are illegal and you were a legal minor, and even though your parents are committing a felony, it should be a felony because of the amount of money involved in the taxes and the burdens that come upon the states in trying to enforce these laws and or having to accept these things. The other thing, going back to Article 1, Section 8, there's this other thing that there has to be a uniform rule on taxations and the uniform burden. And this happens to be subsection 1. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. In other words, if the federal government is going to create a policy that is going to allow dreamers to stay, then all of a sudden, if that's not even and uniform throughout the United States, that policy in itself is a violation because these dreamers become an instant tax or burden on the states. It's one thing for the states to say, okay, we're bringing in so many citizens, and you know, because we have this immigration law. And so we will allow that, but people have to have and meet these standards. But the dreamers were never a part of those standards. They were never in compliance to the standards and following the laws of the land. Okay? So I want to be very, very clear on this, and I want you to understand this, that Congress, even your state legislators, even your county commissioners, and even city councils are responsible to supporting the Constitution, that they must abide by the uniform laws of naturalization and immigration, and that they cannot create sanctuary cities because then they are violating that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land and saying, we don't believe that. It violates their oath in saying that they will support the Constitution. In other words, they're actually supporting an insurrection and an invasion, because the insurrection is being done by citizens of the United States who are supporting these people for a political war. These people that are coming here have no clue what kind of pawns and what kind of evil that they're being used for. Oh, because we're going to vote for these guys because they have the ability to give us things. Actually, they don't. There's nowhere in the Constitution they can use the public purse to hand out anything to illegals or anybody for that matter. If you understand the magnitude, if you understand the breadth of unconstitutional government here, if you understand just where we have lost our way and how far outside the boundaries and the framework that we're operating on, then one can clearly see, if you really want these things to be fixed, it's not a call to action to go march on D.C. The call to action is demand that your state legislators start living up to their oath and supporting the Constitution. And the only way they can truly support the Constitution, because what is a greater way of supporting the Constitution than demanding compliance to it? Oh, well, I support the Constitution, but we're not going to be complying to it. What? That's doublespeak, that's hypocrisy, and that's actually violating their oath. So when we get into section three, because I'm not going to have time to get into that today. We'll get into that probably in our next episode. But when we get into this, you're going to understand that there are teeth in the Constitution. And I want you to understand, we're not even done with Article 4, Section 1. Article 4. The 14th Amendment, Section 1 yet. So the next thing, the next clause after they clarify, and the biggest thing that makes somebody a citizen or on the path of being a citizen is those who are subject to the jurisdiction thereof. In other words, has the state, has the federal government accepted you to become a subject of their jurisdiction? If you're not subject to their jurisdiction, and as far as, you know, the state that you've came from, the country that you came from, they still consider you their citizen, you're subject to them. Only by going through an immigration application do you become subject to the United States jurisdiction. You have some levels of protection. Now, if you screw up and you don't do what you're supposed to do in the immigration process while you're here, they'll like deport you. That happens. But I'm here to tell you that that jurisdiction is critical. If you are here undocumented, that means another country has jurisdiction over you, and you are here illegally, putting an unconstitutional burden and a financial burden upon the community and the state that you are living in. The next clause is one that I harp on a lot. And so this is the individual privileges and immunities clause. No state, quote, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. So what does this mean? This means that a state cannot pass any laws that absolutely violate the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. In other words, those constitutional individual privileges and immunities that are guaranteed by the Constitution, and oh, by the way, all the amendments that are passed within the Constitution are a part of the Constitution as if it is a part of the document. Oh, well, amendments are the... No, amendments are a part of the document. It now is one whole document. That's one of the reasons why Madison was a huge champion in inserting every amendment into where it belonged, instead of just having it tagged to the end. It would have forced people to start recognizing the conflicts when an amendment did not harmoniously or in congruence to the entire document itself created a conflict. The 17th Amendment was one of those things. But here, to be clear, when somebody says, hey, you have a right from the state passing a law, because remember, the Bill of Rights only applied to the federal government passing these laws. So if it's not a 14th Amendment constitutional right, then what is it? And I'm telling you, it is. So if the federal government and the state governments are held to the Bill of Rights, and they can't pass a law that abridges your rights to privacy or anything else, then why is it that they're passing laws that are abridging your right to own weapons? The Second Amendment, for your ability to support the unorganized Constitution. Folks, I will highly recommend that you want to go and read this article on the Constitutional Perspective page on reclaimingtherepublic.org. It will enlighten you as the magnitude of the problem. We'll get into that more. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we'll be back with more on this exact same talk in our next episode. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities,
responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.